Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. Thanks for joining me this week. And as always, thanks for taking the time to share your observations and reports. It's great to have the chance to hear about what is going on in all those places that I can't see myself. So I appreciate the opportunity to find out about what folks are seeing. And you can always send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or even if you just see me on the street, let me know what you've been seeing. And as an example of that this week that I'm grateful for is that somebody mentioned to me that Silver Bay had turned green again this year. I remember last year, I think it was either late July or early August, and hiking up out around there and looking down on Silver Bay and seeing how very green it was looking and thinking, well, that's different for around here. It kind of looks like more like you expect maybe of glacial runoff and that sort of thing. And yet we don't have glaciers there. And it occurred, I was trying to think, well, what might be causing that? And I thought, well, I wonder if it's the rock work they've been doing, a lot of blasting and so forth last year as they were working on Sawmill Creek Road and as well as the Blue Lake Dam work. There was a lot of rock work and blasting going on with that. And I thought, I wonder if that has something to do with it. I talked to some other folks, and I can't remember exactly what I was told, but maybe it was coccolithophores, which is, and if not last year, then certainly this year that was brought up to me as a possibility. And because once again, after a season of kind of going back to normal color, or what seems normal to me, Silver Bay has turned again that green this season. And so there's much less work going on. And if it were just the rock work, you would think that it wouldn't be so seasonal in terms of that color change. So I don't know, maybe it is the coccolithophores, which is a small single-celled algae that grows. And I guess they're a different group of algae than the diatoms, and they're known for kind of making this color. It's unclear to me whether this is something that's been going on for a long time that I just never happened to have noticed before, and that's certainly a possibility, or if this is just a recent occurrence that in the last couple of years this has started to happen out there, and maybe it's just a couple of years this year and it won't happen next year, or maybe it's something more. So if you have experience out there and remember this occurring, I'd certainly be interested in hearing about it just for my own curiosity's sake. Is this a change that's occurred in Silver Bay most years, or at least some years in the past? And I'm curious about what might be driving it, if it is relatively new or maybe perhaps somewhat irregular thing from year to year. So that's just something I've been curious about lately. I've had my parents in town recently, and my dad agreed to come in with my son. So a little later, I'll be sharing a conversation I recorded with them as they took a break from their busy schedule of grandson and grandpa activities out there. And we had actually earlier in the day gone out to Thimbleberry Lake. My son really wanted to go over to Heart Lake, so my dad and he hiked over to Heart Lake while my mom and my daughter and I stayed over around Thimbleberry. My daughter really wanted to look for toads again. And in the same place she found some last year, she found another three or four. I guess she saw a fourth toad, but wasn't able to catch that one. And so she had a good time catching toads there. While I picked some huckleberries, and it wasn't quite as good a year for the huckleberries, it seemed like, as it had been there last year, but certainly got a nice half gallon or so in the hour or so that I picked. So it was nice to do that and just kind of relax there and just have this feeling of this. It was a sunny day, which certainly helps that feeling, but this late summer, just lush growth, and everything's kind of still at maximal greenness. But you know, with our daylight dropping fairly quickly these days, it's not going to be too long and the leaves will start dropping from the trees and we'll be into that fall season. But definitely was enjoying that summer feel that we had. Speaking of this summer, it's been kind of a wet one. Our May, if you recall, was unusually dry, where we had less than an inch of rain over the whole month. And I think almost half of that came in the last 2 days, I believe. But June and July have been kind of the opposite of that. I don't know that it's been record-setting rain exactly. I didn't have a chance to actually go through and look at all the weather records, but I did look at just this year's and the average. And our long-term average rainfall for June is a little over 3 inches, 3.13 inches. This year we got 5.75 inches, so a substantial amount above normal. And then in July, our normals for Sitka here are 3.88 inches, so a little under 4 inches. But we got 6.13 inches here this July. And out of those 61 total days, 42 of them had measurable precipitation, and the other ones were, I think, mostly cloudy. So it has not been an especially sunny summer this year, unlike last. But it's been warm, and so it's not really seemed like a big deal to me. Perhaps some other folks have felt the grayness wearing on them, but I've enjoyed the weather this year, and it's been nice. And I think especially with that sort of relatively low snowpack there to feed our streams this summer with melting snow, it's probably been a good thing for the rivers and the salmon that are returning. I remember in past years when the river has been so low by late July, the pink salmon are just sort of stuck out at the river mouth or just the lower parts of the river and have a little trouble moving up until those rains come. But this year there's been plenty of water, and definitely the pink salmon have been schooling out front, and I hadn't really been up the river at all, or even really looked at it, not even too far up, to see how many fish had moved in there. And I had sort of known that there was lots of fish jumping out in front of the fish hatchery or totem park, but just didn't realize that they'd moved up the river. And this week I had a chance to go for a hike up Indian River with a class of folks that were visiting here, and we went up and started up in just maybe 5 minutes up the trail, past where the cross trail intersection is, but just above, maybe 5 minutes up from the water treatment plant there. There's a gravel bar on the opposite side of the river. The trail comes up kind of in a raised part above the river, and you look across the gravel bar, and I was a little surprised to see an eagle there standing on a fish, and I thought, well, maybe it flew up here with the fish. Although, you know, in hindsight, I'm not sure why it would bother to fly so far up with a fish when it could just eat it on the beach. And then it was just standing on it, and the fish was there, and you could see it was sort of picking at it a little bit. The fish was a little bit bloodied on the kind of front of the belly, and the eagle's beak was a little bloody, and then suddenly the fish started flopping, and it was very much alive. So pretty clearly this eagle had just grabbed the fish out of the river probably just a few minutes before, and had just begun to start eating it, and the fish started flopping back and forth. It was a male pink salmon, and the eagle wasn't quite big enough to keep it from flopping, but it wanted to hold on to it so it didn't accidentally flop back into the river. So it flapped its wings a little bit there and was prancing around trying to get its talons back into the pink salmon. It was kind of entertaining to watch, and finally the pink salmon settled down again, and the eagle went back to work on that. And so I was able to get some photos of that, and if you're interested, you can visit my website, sitkanature.org/WordPress, and that's where I post some of my web blog posts with photos. And that was a fun one for me, and just, you know, 3 minutes up, or I shouldn't even say 3 minutes, more like 30 yards up the trail, there was a very clear set of fresh bear tracks. While I'd been waiting for the class to show up, somebody had gone up the trail and came back pretty quickly, and turned out to be somebody that I knew or had met before. And she said that the workers up there had told her that two bears had just walked up the trail ahead of her, and so she decided to take a longer hike somewhere else instead. And so I suspect it was one of those two bears, that these tracks that we saw were just perfectly fresh in this mud. It was just the right consistency, you know, dry enough that it wasn't sloppy and left clear prints, but not so dry that it kept the bear from leaving those imprints. So it was fun to get a picture of those and just think about the fact that the bear had been there. And of course, we were with a large group, and so I was not really concerned about the bear in particular at that point. But it's definitely been kind of a busy year, shall we say, around town for bears and neighborhoods. And maybe it's more busy than usual, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it's just part of the Facebook phenomenon where we all get to hear about these reports a little more immediately. So it has its good and bad parts, I suppose. But for myself, I haven't really seen much in the ways of bears. But my son did see a bear just down the street at the National Cemetery there above Jeff Davis Street, and told me a little bit about that. And in part of the conversation, I ended up cutting for time constraints, told me about looking at that bear and taking pictures of it, and then sort of following it was the way that he described it. And I found out a little bit later, and you'll hear this later in this conversation, about how he didn't actually, you know, in the beginning I was picturing him actually going following where the bear had gone, but it turns out that it wasn't quite as nervous for a parent as that. So I'll take a minute to introduce that conversation. My dad lived here in Sitka from 1973 to 1996 when he moved away after his father passed away. so that he could help take care of his mother. So my parents lived here the entire time I was growing up, then moved away from home. And of course, my son has been growing up here as well. And they have a lot of common interests in hunting and fishing especially. And so I thought it would be fun to have them come in and share a little bit about some of the things that they do together. And ended up talking more to my dad about berry picking, but also got some stories from Connor. And we had just been out at Thimbleberry Lake earlier that day, as I was speaking about. And so I start here by asking Connor a little bit about that fishing trip. Connor, actually, let me ask you, how is the fishing today at Thimbleberry Lake?
Okay.
Okay. And what passes for okay in your book?
Seeing fish rise and casting over by where they were and having a few come after it.
So you were outside.
Yes.
It was a nice, lovely day.
Rowing around in a boat trying to go the long way back to the dock.
And so that's a good day. That's a good day, yes. Fishing. I guess I've heard that before. I saw a guy working out in just some horrendous weather. And he said, well, it seems like it's a little rough out for working outside. And he goes, well, the worst day outside is better than the best day inside. And so that must be your philosophy for fishing, just about.
Somewhat, yeah.
Somewhat. But did you catch any fish today?
No.
No fish today. So the fallback plan was what?
Row around.
Oh, for you, what was your grandpa's fallback plan?
Pick berries.
And you weren't too into picking berries today, huh?
No, I was more into getting my lessons of rowing in.
Getting your lessons.
You never picked a berry.
You never picked a berry. And Grandpa, as a result of you rowing him around the wrong way and backwards and in yeah. circles, it sounded like.
Yeah.
So the boat at Heart Lake, it's a whaler up there, isn't it?
No,
what is it?
It's a fiberglass boat of some kind.
Oh, okay.
What kind.
But it had paddles with it today?
It had two canoe paddles.
Yeah.
One of them kind of broken up some, but still usable. Another one was broken. We didn't have to use it.
Yeah.
And one pretty good one. I'd taken an oar up with us, but we didn't have to use it. Somebody had taken the oar locks off of it last year before we went up there, and there wasn't any oars last year. So we wanted to try going around and
make sure you had at least something to move it around with.
Yeah.
And so Connor and you each took a paddle, I take it, and then...
No, just took one paddle.
Oh, you just took one paddle. Oh, I thought you were saying that you were paddling on one side and he paddled the other direction on the other.
That's with the canoe oars.
Oh, okay.
We used those.
I see. And so Connor was not Mr. Reliable on the paddles there.
No.
Yes,
I
was.
When I got some knots in my line, he was doing fine paddling, and then next thing you know, it took me a while to get him off because... My eyes aren't quite what they used to be, and when I did, I looked up and we've gone backwards. What are you doing, Connor? He giggled and kept rowing backwards.
What were you doing?
Going back the other way around.
So. Going back the other way. Oh, because Grandpa had said it was time to head back. Is that what it was?
Kind of more or less, yeah. But I decided, I'll just go back, but take the long way.
So you decided that catching no fish was better than stopping fishing and picking berries.
Yes.
We had about 100 yards to go when I started working on my line, and about 200 yards to go when I looked up.
Well, you were making some good time then.
Yeah.
It was wind-aided.
I see. Yeah, that helps. Yeah. And so I think that the fish up there, or their brook trout, they've been introduced into there. And I don't know if there's brook trout elsewhere around Sitka. I haven't paid too much attention
Green
to
Lake.
There's some in the pond here in town.
Swan Lake has brook trout also?
Oh, Thimbleberry has brook trout.
Okay. Interesting. And you didn't want to fish in Thimbleberry. How come, Connor?
Too much stuff in the way. Too many bushes behind us. Not a good dock that to fish off of and no boat to row around in.
So all sorts of reasons. And you were going to go up Thimbleberry before, weren't you, Connor?
No.
Or Heart Lake before.
Yes.
And how come you didn't go up to Heart Lake before?
Because Grandpa and Grams got scared out by a sign that says, Salmon Cub Charged.
Oh, did you tell them that you just charged after bears anyway?
Yeah.
And because you were all thought they were cool?
Yeah.
And so you were going to be you know, the brave guy to scare them off?
In theory,
yeah.
Yeah, they all don't like their pictures taken, and he's got his camera out all the time, so he was going to take pictures.
I see. Them. Yes, the camera is very threatening to bears.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure I really like hearing about your sort of blasé-ness with respect to bears around town. You got to be a little careful. Or do you not think so?
No, I know so.
Oh, okay.
But I let it walk around the cemetery quite a bit. I just walked. I have enough time to get far enough away that I figured just walk along the sidewalk. And
oh, so you stayed along the sidewalk. It wasn't like you were actually chasing. Well, that's reassuring to hear.
I stayed on the sidewalk. I didn't run up into the cemetery to try to find them.
All right. Well, that sounds a bit more sensible. But you were still prepared after that big bear experience and seeing how fast they walked away from you when they didn't know you were there, that, you know, a sow and a cub on Thimbleberry Trail were going to be okay with you. I see. Fishing was more important. I see. Well, you have an interesting set of priorities there, I suppose.
I figured the bear would be more scared of us than we would of it, and if we gave it enough heads-up warning, then it would have moved off, probably.
That sow wouldn't be scared of us at all.
That might be. Have you ever been charged by a bear?
No, I just read bear tales.
Yeah, well, Alaska bear tales is a little bit intense in some places.
And they're all true.
And, it's interesting, you know, bears-wise, there's certainly plenty of bears around here, and certainly people have been attacked by bears around here, but most people, in my impression is, have been out, certainly myself, I've been out and never been charged by one. I've had a couple run away from me that I didn't see until I either saw or heard after they were running, but never been charged. But Jonathan, my brother, your uncle, he had an encounter with a bear. Did he tell you about that?
No.
When they were on their wilderness trip and the sow came right up. And
I remember that. Huffing and puffing. And
yeah, and what did that make you think about bears?
Yeah, he kind of forgot about that one.
Yeah. It's the mind of the, it's all good. And then you don't have to worry about it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I imagine you won't forget about it if it ever happens to you, huh?
Yeah, no.
And then you might be a little more worried. But I've never had one, you know, never had a bad encounter with a bear. But mm-hmm. But certainly people do.
Yeah.
And hopefully you don't.
Yeah. I guess the two things that I don't want to, that I'm worried about a bear coming after me that I'm doing is fishing and cleaning a fish. We're coming out of the woods with a fish. We're deer hunting and packing the deer out.
Yeah, some people have had trouble there.
We're getting deer.
Yeah. Well, and so have you ever seen bears when you've been hunting or fishing or berry picking?
No, not when I was on land. I was on the boat headed hunting, but not when I was on land. I don't want to shoot a bear, never have wanted to shoot a bear, and so I want them to leave me alone too.
Yeah.
And thus far we've had a good agreement.
You've had a good agreement. Because you used to go fishing for silvers in the rivers in the fall, yeah?
Yep. Plenty of bear along Nakwasina.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, you could even smell them, and sometimes the hair would just stand up on the back of my neck, and I would turn around and leave then.
Yeah. You decided that was enough.
Go down a little lower on the river and continue fishing.
Yeah. And so, but never actually saw one when you're up there, huh?
No. Just huge tracks.
Yeah. I remember the first time I had a bear encounter, which is actually at Indian River where the flume splits off. And I had been riding around. It used to be that behind the post office, it wasn't developed at all. Just right behind there is this kind of this old trail and mud and stuff. And then there was the muskegs and some muddy trails up there. And so I was riding my mountain bike through there when I was in high school. And so I thought, oh, I'll just go to Indian River and I'll wash my bike off in the river because I didn't want it to be all muddy. And I wasn't even thinking about it being, you know, mid-August and there being fish in the river. But I went down that little lane there right to the first one, actually, there's a little housing development there. Flume Circle, I think they call it, or something like that. And I went down there, and I heard this broom, 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 and this bear comes running across in front of me. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. I wonder what it's running from. And I decided it was either running from me or it was running from a bigger bear. And if it was a bigger bear, I didn't want to see it. And if it was me, I didn't really want it to decide that, hey, wait, maybe that guy's not so scary. I'll go back and check him out. So I decided I'd turn around and go ahead and hose my bike off at home instead of dipping it in the river. But yeah, it all happened fairly fast. So I wasn't too, it wasn't scary exactly, but it definitely gave me that was close. And it's even closer now. There's people living down there. And I know that's one of the places that folks get the the reports of, you know, bears digging around in houses, trash and stuff like that. So I was, but you never even saw them picking berries. They didn't, you weren't sharing the berry patches with them?
No, I tried not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I picked where there were good berries. There was one out at Stargavin that I found this one really good blueberry bush.
Yeah.
And I figured there was a few gallons of blueberries on this one bush. It was really good that year.
Yeah.
And I didn't have time to pick it, but I knew where it was. And so I went back a couple of days later, and it had been stripped. The old bear just put the limb in his mouth and pulled it out.
Oh, wow.
Just funneled the berries down, berries and leaves.
Huh.
And the bush was just stripped. I didn't stay around to pick too many berries off that one. I didn't leave. He was around there somewhere.
Yeah.
We were a log or bush away from each other somewhere. I never saw him, and he didn't see me, I guess.
Well, if he did, he didn't do anything, huh?
Yeah.
So how could you tell it was the bear, that like the leaves and everything were gone?
Yeah, not all completely, but I mean,
yeah,
mostly, and most of the, what else would do it?
Yeah.
I mean, a person wouldn't do that. They'd try to leave all the leaves there and stuff.
Yeah.
And this was just forcefully
ripped. Tell. Yeah. Yeah.
From how the limbs were. The limbs were long and willowy.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't like a lot of branched, like a lot of blueberry bushes were. And it fit well the bear's tastes.
Well, and so that was out at Stargavin, and it seems like you used to pick out there a lot. I just remember, like, I don't remember how many times I ever went out there with you. It probably wasn't all that many in the end, but I remember going out there and you picking a couple of 5-gallon buckets heaping full, and kind of Sunday afternoon sort of thing, and Mom would sit in the car and read, and Jonathan and I would go up on the hill above the cliff there, which was it's a lot shorter cliff than it used to be. The borrow pit there, kind of quarry thing along Nelson Logging Road, just a little before you get to the rifle range, and it's very much overgrown by alders just in that area now. And of course, the upland areas, the trees came in and killed off most of the bushes. There's up in some places, there's places where I think it was wetter, less productive anyway, and the trees didn't come in as much. And I've, you know, when we go up there to hike up Stargavin Ridge for a nice hike, then there's a few berry bushes, but I don't think anything like you used to find. And so I was trying to think when that was. It's like that the 80s probably, when you were up there mostly, or?
Probably mid 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that was probably starting. It seems like you said that area had been logged just before you got here.
They were still hauling logs out of there.
Oh, they were hauling logs.
I think so.
So that was like 73 or so.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting. And so a few years, and then that was highly productive berries. And then a few years later, so you left in the mid-90s. Still were picking there when you left?
I can't really remember when I stopped, but I think I still was.
Yeah.
Because when I came back there in the summertime a few years later, we've been gone now almost 20 years.
Yeah.
That was all overgrown. Spots that I thought would have berries for years and years was overgrown.
Yeah. So. Well, and I remember when I moved up here full-time again to start teaching at SJ, going up there, and it was overgrown, and I could see the canes stems of the blueberries and stuff underneath, and they were rotting. I mean, they weren't gone yet, but they were rotting, and that dense hemlock second growth was in there, and they've thinned out a bunch now, so I don't know if maybe there'll be some berries that come back in underneath the thinned stuff, but it seems like that's kind of certainly not what it once was as far as berries go.
No, that was really good picking. I mean, it wasn't, I figured it'd take me about 3 hours to get, I figured probably 6 gallons per 5-gallon bucket, because I had a garbage bag in there that I would heap up inside and then tie the top and come down. Mary finally quit coming out there because I'd still be picking it after dark, and she couldn't read anymore. So,
how did you get? I mean, there were still slash logs in there and stuff. Wasn't that a little bit?
I knew where I was going.
I see. It seems like that could be. Well, as a kid, I remember deciding that it was very much not. Well, we had a little bucket, like a little 1 gallon ice cream, you know, bucket.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
I remember. Yeah, we'd pick 10 berries and eat 12.
No, I think it was more like I'd pick 50 berries. Eat 10 of them, then 35 of them, the rest would drop out, and so I'd eat the last five, because why bother? Because you'd slip on the logs, and the bucket would tip over, and they'd fall on the ground, and you're like, why bother? So then we'd just play around up there. I remember the old logs that they'd left were a little treacherous. You couldn't even see sometimes, and some places Devil's Club was coming up through, and that wasn't really what you wanted to fall into or grab onto, either one. And so I don't know. I can't imagine coming up and down there carrying 5 gallon buckets full of berries. That must have been a little.
Knew where the trails were.
I see. Would you do that these days?
If I could.
If you could, yeah.
But there's no berries up there to mess around with it.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever would have that much ambition quite.
And I don't have somebody to give them to now. I used to pick them and give them to the cafeteria at SJ.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd clean them all, and that was a big thing. I didn't like cleaning them, but they'd take them.
Yeah.
Mrs. Finsley was so good at taking all that stuff that I'd pick. At one year, I know I got 50-some gallons of berries, and they took a lot of them.
Wow. That's a lot of berries.
Yeah.
That's a lot of berries to pick. Are you going to pick 50 gallons of berries this year for us, Connor?
No.
And we could eat berries. If we picked 50 gallons of berries, if you picked 50 gallons of berries, we could eat a gallon of berries a week just about.
Yeah, that would make just one huge pie.
The world's biggest pie.
Yeah.
I don't know where you'd put them. You'd have to buy another freezer.
Yeah, that's a lot of berries, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I do like to eat them, but 50 gallons is probably more than I would manage to eat in a year.
Yeah, probably.
So the other ones that I remember your grandpa picking were cranberries. Have you ever picked those, Connor?
Yeah.
Those are no telling places.
Those are I was going to tell them about the ones that aren't there anymore.
Yeah, that was some of the best places.
Yeah, the best cranberry places are places that are now covered up by buildings. Mm. So they're not so easy to get to anymore. Well, I mean, they're much easier to get to in a way, but there's not any berries there to pick, huh?
Yeah.
And so what's your experience picking cranberries, Connor?
Kind of tedious.
So is it easier to pick cranberries or blueberries or huckleberries or salmonberries?
Salmonberries
are easiest. What's the next easiest?
Probably cranberries.
You think cranberries are easier than blueberries and huckleberries?
Yeah.
How come?
You don't have to clean them as much.
Well, I'm the picking part, not the cleaning part.
Okay, then. Probably the blueberry thing or huckleberries if you had those huckleberry scraper things.
Yeah, the berry picker. Yeah. That's my experience, certainly, because you can actually reach up and there's a bunch of them all together. And what happens with the cranberries?
There's some of them together. Like if you get Lincoln cranberries, there's a bunch of them together some of the time.
The lingonberries, sometimes people call those low bush cranberries. Mm-hmm. Also because they grow on a little bush, yeah? Mm-hmm. Is there another kind of cranberry you've seen?
Bog cranberry, those. If you find the right thing, then you can find them up on a big mound of moss. And it's a good year for them. They're all up on that.
You can get like 5 or 10 in one spot, yeah. And that seems like it's a pretty good pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how big a batch do you think is the biggest you've ever picked?
Oh, probably between Grandpa and I in one spot, probably about 200.
200 berries?
Yeah.
And how many of those were Grandpa and how many of those were you?
Probably about 150 were Grandpa and 50 were mine, probably. It would be my guess.
Don't you remember a couple of years ago when we got a couple of gallons up there in that one spot?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was more than 200 berries.
Couple of gallons. That's actually a lot of cranberries.
Yeah.
A lot of cranberries.
Although I think it's a good year for them as well.
And so cranberries, again, are one of those things that's a little spotty.
That was the only spot that year that we found that there was many berries.
I remember you talking about being out hunting and not seeing a lot of deer, so just keeping an eye open for cranberries and not even seeing many cranberries. And then you came back with a bunch. And they were all in one little kind of spot, one end of one muskeg, not even necessarily a very big muskeg, and There was a good crop of them right there. Mm-hmm. And so it is interesting, and I'm curious myself what drives that. I have no idea what, you know.
Connor even got excited in that. He went from being kind of morose to being right down there picking just like I was.
Mm-hmm. Takes quite a bit of berries to get you excited about that, huh?
Yeah, and pretty easy.
Especially when you think that there might be deer around the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're watching us in the bushes.
So I want you to tell me a little bit about, you have this idea about deer hunting that you want to get up super early in the morning. Is that what your idea
yeah,
is? Tell me about this idea.
Up before daylight, like an hour up before sunrise, and get up there and be waiting till shooting light's good, and then just wait for a deer to walk by.
And so what makes you think this will be a successful approach?
Because in the spots that I've wanted to go, we've hunted there the day before and stuff, just walked around with the rifle, just looking for deer, and seen lots of fresh deer tracks, lots. So it looked like a pretty good trail that they consistently mm-hmm. use back and forth. And like some places where it's kind of spotty, where it looks like they come by there, you just don't know when.
Yeah. And so you think that because you saw all these tracks, then probably if you were there early enough in the morning, yeah. they would walk by and you'd be able to get one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although you have to be a certain distance away from the trail, otherwise you'd pretty much touch one and you wouldn't be able to do that because they'd realize you're there and run off.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably don't want to shoot one that close,
no,
huh?
No.
And you don't want to just grab it and wrestle it down?
No. I'll let the roots take care of that.
I think it seems like you've seen, have you seen a video of something, like every once in a while there's a YouTube video or something of somebody that tries to wrestle a deer, and it turns out deer are pretty spry and yeah. kind of tough.
I've seen
and they can go to town on a person. Their hooves are pretty
sharp.
Yeah, sharp enough. But so that's interesting. So you think that so now my question is, how long do you think you'd have to wait there?
Oh, probably depends partly on what's going on, but anywhere between probably an hour to maybe 2.5 hours.
And so finally, what's the longest you've ever sat still in one place, quietly?
Deer hunting?
Doing anything.
Oh, probably about 2.5 hours, probably.
And what were you doing?
I was sitting in my bird blind in my front yard watching birds.
Watching birds. You think you made 2.5 hours out there?
Yeah, well, at least an hour for sure.
At least an hour.
Maybe not even.
Yeah, maybe an hour.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe when you're 14, is it that you're gonna yes. want to go hunting on your own?
Yes.
Maybe when you're 14, you can try that mm-hmm. hunting method. Do you suppose there might be a reason people here don't use that method?
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe just because the bears walk up and down that trail as well.
That could be. I honestly don't know. I know in the Midwest they have, you know, people have their blinds and they go there, and that's where they.
Yeah, they also have food plot stuff and have trail cameras out there too. You got food plot stuff out there where it draws the deer in.
Mm-hmm.
These trails, you have to let the deer walk by as they're going to their places.
Do you ever try and follow the deer tracks and see where
sometimes,
they go?
Sometimes, yeah.
How far have you been able to follow them?
One time when I was quite a bit younger, I followed one all the way up to a deer.
Oh.
To where I could see it.
Oh, and where was that?
Oh, up on Hillcrest.
Oh, so in that case, we saw the deer first, right?
No, I think I had just gotten to your place from coming from someplace else, and you said deer tracks.
Oh, I saw the deer. Yeah. I know I saw the deer first,
yeah.
So it wasn't too far in front of us. And then I do remember that, and it was in the wintertime, and it was snowy.
Mm-hmm. When they're easiest to track.
Yeah, it was fresh snow, and it went down the end of Hillcrest and down kind of behind Kelly Street into the... Mm-hmm. what is now the Sitka Counseling buildings there. And
mm-hmm.
and somewhere it crossed over to the park. Were you able to follow the tracks across the parking lot? Or did you pick them up on the other side?
I think I probably picked them up on the other side, would be my guess.
Yeah, and I remember Rowan and I were much slower than you, and so we kept following, and we were down into the park, and Rowan goes, "Connor's calling me." I was like, "What?" And somehow she heard you. I don't mm-hmm. know. You were pretty far away, but she heard you, and I hadn't noticed you calling at her. But then we followed the deer around. Actually, it wandered all over the park there. And it seems like mm-hmm. you did catch up and see it at least once.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Rowan and I did, but but we did follow the tracks and tried to follow your tracks too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little easier in the snow, huh?
Quite a bit easier in the snow, unless if we have a good mud patch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and those don't tend to last for too far,
no.
do they?
I guess if you're in a muskeg as well, you could probably follow them around because all the moss is all soft and stuff. Everything's wet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you follow tracks in muskegs ever?
Sometimes I can watch them, see them walk around.
What are the easiest tracks to see in the muskeg?
Probably deer.
Deer tracks?
Probably.
Yeah. That's interesting. So I know, you know, I don't know, actually, maybe your grandpa knows why, because I don't think they use blinds in Idaho either, do they?
Some.
Some do?
Not deer particularly, but I've seen elk blinds, particularly for bow hunting.
Oh, all right.
Up in the trees.
Yeah.
By a spring or something like that.
I'm mostly associated with kind of the upper Midwest, I guess, maybe the East Coast. And white-tailed deer, and maybe, right. I don't know if it's the difference between white-tailed and black-tailed deer. I don't know what difference there would be that would make one method better
than
the other.
Or an Idaho mule deer.
Mule deer, yeah, and so mule deer and black-tailed deer are technically the same species, although looking at them, the ones here don't look that much, I suppose, like the mule deer, especially size-wise.
Right.
Yeah.
And their antlers are a lot different.
Oh, okay.
Their antlers are more like, a buck's antlers are more like a white-tail, and they're...
The mule deer?
No.
Or the ones here?
The black tail are more like a white tail. How their antlers are formed, the mule deer are very different.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen too many mule deer down there. I just remember seeing them running around a couple times in the wintertime. So, back to cranberries, though. So you picked a couple of gallons of cranberries, and how many? You think you picked about 50 of them, and Grandpa picked the other 2 gallons?
Maybe. I probably picked more than 50. But
he got more than 50 when we got those 2 gallons.
Oh, yeah. I guess if you got excited.
Roland probably even got that many.
Was she there with you that time?
One, I can't remember. She was there when we first found it, but she was there another time.
Yeah. Yeah, Roland's kind of funny that way. If she decides that she's going to pick, she'll find more berries than anybody, it seems like. But if a lot of times she doesn't want to pick, and then she won't do anything. So, but Connor can be that way, too. He doesn't have quite as sharp eyes, but he also decides that berry picking isn't that much fun.
Yeah.
But you do like to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice if you help your grandpa pick them, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So a couple gallons. And I remember in your old journals, you had 1 year maybe you got 6.5 gallons of cranberries.
Yes.
Which I don't like. How many hours would that have taken?
Took very little time.
Oh. It
was unbelievably good cranberries. Bog cranberries. And fairly close. I went up there and I mean, I could just almost get handfuls off the top of
them. Oh, wow.
The moss, the bog cranberries had come out on the moss and the berries were just laying on top of the moss with very little other stuff hiding them.
Yeah.
And it was just good, really good.
And I'm going to guess you went back there again and tried the next year.
And found almost nothing.
Yeah. Huh.
And have never found anything there since. It's still an open place.
Yeah. Could you see the plants of the bog cranberries there still? Or were the plants?
Oh,
I mean,
the
like
plants.
The,
there's
yeah,
plants there.
They just didn't have the berries.
They're just as ideal conditions. The soil had been disturbed some.
Oh, okay.
And that tends to be very, really make the bog cranberries good. There was another place that was, they were quite good. I'll tell you where that was, because that's all houses now and businesses back up. I don't even know the name of the street.
Yeah.
But back up, well, it might be the same. Is it Smith Street that?
Oh, Smith Street, yeah.
That Spinards is on?
I think so.
Yeah,
it's one of those, yeah.
Back up there when they first made that cut up there, but it was a few years before they ever made the road and built anything back up there. And that was where they disturbed the soil there for kind of a backhoe or a track road. That was real good cranberry picking for a lot of years. And that was one of the best places I had to get them every year. Every year there was some there.
Yeah.
And
mostly lingonberries or bog cranberries or kind of a mix of both?
Both.
Yeah.
The bog cranberries probably were the most, but the lingonberries, there were some places I'd go back and pick them off of stumps every year, and they were pretty good.
So you notice that they're they had a kind of a slightly like microhabitat preferences that
yes
that the lingonberries so it sounds like stumps at least or the other kind of so raised places more where yeah. maybe better drainage or something or but still open
yes
yeah and the bog cranberries tended to be down on the
they're in the grass a lot
yeah
hard to see sometimes
yeah
and it's surprising number some there are sometimes when you get down and move the grass around, particularly on in a wet October when the rains a lot and the moss grows and the moss kind of covers the cranberries too
mm.
and in the grass and so it makes it real hard to see them.
So, and I guess I remember berry picking with you a couple of times, cranberries, and no doubt, so it seems like October sort of, I guess that was that window where you weren't deer hunting, after September deer hunts, before November deer hunts, before it all frosted up, and that's when you would go cranberry picking.
Yeah, September and October.
Yeah, and so I kind of remember being out there, but what I have, this image I have is of pouring down rain, crawling around on hands and knees in the muskeg, and staying very dry, no doubt, I'm sure.
All that, yeah. Yes.
And then coming back with a couple of pints of berries or something after 4 hours.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes better.
Yeah. And so not, I suppose there's probably not a lot of competition for those. I mean, there are some people I know that like to go pick a few cranberries every year, but.
I know two families that were out there in the muskegs that I picked in some.
Mm.
They're. The primary pickers are dead now.
Yeah.
I won't say who they are, but they would, matter of fact, the one lady told me about the one place, and I generalized from there where she told me wasn't all that great,
but yeah.
There was some good places not too far away from there. And so I'd always take her some cranberries when I get them. When I first heard about cranberries, I mean, I didn't really like store-bought cranberries very well.
Yeah.
And somebody told me that one of the volunteers at Sheldon Jackson College would pick wild cranberries and make a punch every year for Thanksgiving. Well, that would be nice. I'm going to go out and find some wild cranberries. So I went out, and I found wild cranberries. And, you know, I started picking, and then I found where there were better spots just over the year, 2, 3, 4 years, you know, and I don't just go to one spot. I mean, I generalize around and find better spots if I can. And then I saw this lady. She had ceased being volunteer for a few years, and then she came back as a volunteer. And I talked to her and said, boy, you know, I'm sure glad to hear about the wild cranberries you picked at encouraged me to go out and pick cranberries. Now I get quite a few cranberries. And she says, I never picked cranberries. I said, well, somebody said you did. Oh, no. I made that punch out of red huckleberries.
Oh, those are a little easier to get.
I would have never looked for cranberries if somebody would have told me right.
Yeah, so. That's funny. And there's, I mean, so cranberries aren't exactly like, they're a more intensive labor crop here. So I'm also, you know, there's some other sorts of berries that some people harvest. And did you ever pick the, I kind of remember going out once and at least talking about it, but I don't remember if you actually, it seems like you didn't care for them very much. The gray currants or stink currants, sometimes they're called. You didn't.
There's a reason they call them stink currants.
You weren't real fond of those.
They are not my favorite berry.
Yeah,
I could eat them, but I would prefer having peaches and cream or something like that.
Connor, have you tried those stink currants before?
Yeah, I don't really prefer them.
You don't prefer them?
No.
You don't want to go pick a bunch this year if it's
no,
a good year?
No.
I think there are probably ways that you can prefer them, but they do definitely have, I mean, they're related to currants. The
Esther Littlefield had some fruit compote that she made mm-hmm. with wild berries and stuff from around here. It was quite good, and I think there may have been some of those in there. There were elderberries in there, everything. It was quite tasty.
Yeah.
It was probably well-sugared,
And that could make a difference.
That could,
and
yeah.
Some of the flavors, the other thing, might mellow out the not-so-flavorful currants. And, I mean, they may complement each other well. But
yeah.
Whatever it was, what she made was good.
But you never got the recipe for that and
no.
And just left the gray currants alone.
Left them things alone, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the one memory I have of gray currants is going out Blue Lake Road, and I think Esther and Charlie Littlefield were out there up on the hill.
They were trying to pick elderberries.
Picking
yes.
The gray currants, I thought.
Oh, no, they were trying
they were
to get
picking
elderberries.
Oh, okay.
And Charlie had fallen.
Oh, all right.
he was sitting in the car, and Esther's out there trying to stretch up and get the elderberries.
All right. Yeah, I didn't. For some reason, I associated that with gray currants, and I'm not sure. I was pretty young, I think, at the time.
They probably picked them as the opportunity arose.
Yeah, and that's a good, I mean, that area, Blue Lake Road, that kind of avalanche slope, wet slope area is a place that the gray currants like to grow. And elderberries seem to grow most anywhere. But did you ever pick elderberries or use them yourself?
Not around here, not the red ones. I did the blue ones down in Idaho.
Yeah.
And made juice out of them and gave some to my aunt who made pie.
Mm.
She called it buckshot pie because of little
the
berries,
little seeds.
Oh, the size of buckshot.
Yeah.
And they were good. The juice was all right, especially if I mixed it with lemonade, and it was good.
Yeah, I think the red elderberries here, as I understand, you don't want to use the seeds. You got to strain it all out. So essentially, you're limited to
Esther
juice
used
stuff.
The seeds.
Oh, did she?
But
so.
You just don't use many.
Oh, okay. And maybe spit them out when you're eating them or something. I don't know.
Eat them.
Well, all right. Yeah. So the other berries that I guess there's a couple other berries that locally at least there's the cloudberries. There's a few places where you can get some of those some years. Did you ever go for those?
I've picked some. I really like agoutik.
Oh, yeah.
Eskimo ice cream. Mm-hmm. Maybe that Phyllis Moore just makes some good Eskimo ice cream. And she would get her cloudberries, or they call them salmon berries, out in the tundra up north. She would get them from home and bring them down, but they're the same as the what we call cloudberries here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they make good agoutik. And that mixed with, I guess it's cranberries and bananas mixed together makes a good agoutik too, but it doesn't have the cloudberries in there much. So.
She probably didn't. Did you ever eat it with is it whipped seal oil? Is that and
I don't think
fish
that
in there.
I had that. No.
You didn't have the the old school version.
No.
Yeah. I
not down here.
Yeah, I remember eating some of Phyllis Moore's Eskimo ice cream at I guess church potluck kind of thing, and
yes.
And haven't had a lot of sugar in it. It was good.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I actually kind of like those berries. The cloudberries for me are one that, at first when I was first eating them, they're kind of like, these are weird. And some people call them baked appleberries because they say they taste like baked apples. But to me, they don't taste like baked apples. No. They have their own flavor. I think the most I've ever picked in a year or seen in a year was a quart or two. And they're, and that's quite a few for around here.
There's one muskeg that I think you could get more than that off of.
Mm.
On a lot of years, it appears, when I've been up there.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I don't mind eating them.
Yeah.
Just, I don't think I want a bowl with those and sugar and cream on them, but...
I've eaten them that way.
Are they good?
Yeah, if you like the flavor. They're seedy.
I like the seeds. That's why I like them,
because
I get the seeds and then I chew
then
on
salmon
the
berries
seeds.
Would probably be...
And I like to chew the seeds and salmon berries. But
yeah.
Salmon berries can take that... bitterness away from them, and they're kind of mushy, but it's a good flavor then.
With sugar,
of course.
So you get the flavor and the crunchiness of the seeds,
I guess.
So that was one thing that I also, I guess, thinking of things that I remember is you grew up in farm country where, mostly what you were harvesting were cultivated things, apricots, cherries, apples, and that. And I'm trying to remember how much your mother put up every year of various things. It seems like it was generally the order of hundreds of quarts of each sort of peaches, apricots, and Grandpa, I remember him telling me he'd eat a quart of fruit for breakfast and maybe another quart for lunch. Three quarts a day. And over the course of the year, that adds up a bit.
When he was younger.
And so you kind of, that's where you come from, is that sort of like seeing that sort of production level. And that's how you guys ate. I mean, you probably didn't buy a lot of stuff from the store when you were growing up.
No.
It was all stuff that was put up in jars. And so here you move up to Alaska and you're around just over 30 at that time. And there's not a lot of fruit trees here. You know, there's actually these days there's more apple trees around that people have planted that seem to do all right.
Yes.
But when you were first here, I think probably very few of those, and yet you still had this, well, let's go pick fruit mentality. And so so canning, you canned rhubarb a lot.
Esther Littlefield, she canned chunks of rhubarb, and so I started doing that. That became probably our primary fruit. I also would go to grocery stores, and when they're ready to throw something out, I was there to catch a lot of it sometimes, and there's a lot of good stuff in there. And I one year I canned 50 quarts of plums. I did a lot of canning while I was here. To give you an example of the volume of jars of stuff that I had, my brother-in-law and I, when we moved south 20 years ago, we set out there dumping old fruit on the compost pile as we were going to leave, and I took home with me 700 quart jars.
Oh, wow.
And plus pints and stuff, and left some jars here that I didn't want anymore. They were a different kind of jar. So, and then I inherited Mom's jars, so I've got a lot of fruit jars.
Yeah. I do remember Grandpa bringing up fruit when he would come up, and he'd take back fish, and so you canned up the fruit there. But the other thing I remember you canning quite a bit of was those salmon berries, and salmon, just like Connor said, they're easy to pick, and I personally don't really care for them much unless they're sun grown. If they're in a bright sunny spot, they can actually be all right.
Yeah.
But other than that, they have this kind of, especially the aftertaste flavor that I'm not.
There's kind
super
of a bitter
of.
Bite or something to them, and the canning takes that away.
Oh, okay.
And put a little cream on. Actually, you could probably strain the salmon berries out and just drink the juice.
Yeah.
And put cream on that juice, and
your doctor might not approve of that. For you these days, huh?
It might help the level of cholesterol get a little higher.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess the other kind of berry that grows here, but just not very much, is the nagoon berries, or in strawberries. I guess there are the wild strawberries here too. And it seems like I do remember you talking about finding those, but mostly just kind of along the beaches and small bits, not really ever worth
what,
trying.
The nagoons?
Nagoons and wild strawberries.
Yeah.
But not really enough to bother trying to pick unless you happen to be there anyway.
Yes. Nagoons are very good flavor.
Yeah. There's bunches of them up in Yakutat, I guess. Were you there in the season when they were ripe?
There are bunches of them in
Juneau. Juneau, too, also on the Stikine.
Yakutat, only thing I ever saw was tons of strawberries.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and you were more like by Dry Bay when you spent time in Yakutat.
Yes.
Yeah. And when I was visiting Yakutat there, I saw quite a few nagoons kind of on the beach there by Cannon Beach, close to town. And I don't know if I don't know how common they are down in Dry Bay or not, but also even more strawberries. They were unfortunately just barely starting to get ripe while I was there. Oh, but
those strawberry jam made from them, a friend that lived up there, he had a hard time getting salmon berries, but he'd get some, and the salmon berry jam was really good. Of course, they got more sunshine in the summer than what we get down here, and I think anyway. And then the strawberry jam from those beach strawberries, which were so sweet. You just had to leave about the bottom quarter inch there because it was pretty sandy.
Oh, you didn't wash them off? Or?
Well, you wash them off, but that sand is driven in.
Yeah, well. I mean,
when in a real windstorm, the wet sand blows too.
Wow. Yeah, I remember you talking about seeing that and finding glass balls and that kind of thing. And I don't know if they find glass balls much these days, but that was, I guess that was probably 30 years ago now that you
spent
that. Well,
they probably do, because just not as often.
Yeah.
Because beaches wash out.
Oh, okay. So stuff that had been buried.
One place that my friend had, where a beach had washed out, and he'd found these old rolling pin type floats that I guess are pretty hard to come by, and figured that those probably came out of the where the beach had washed out by where the one river was coming in or one stream coming in.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I'd not really realized until going up there just how extensive that beach is. It's like, it's 100 or more miles of almost all sandy beach, you know, a couple of places where streams cut out, but it's really pretty amazing how much sand is up
and
there.
And then the earthquake came and raised of it. And so you see the logs back in there and wonder how they could ever have gotten back there. But I guess that's what happened.
The earthquake, yeah. Well, there was a big earthquake in Yakutat in, I think, I want to say in the 1890s or early 1900s. And there were some guys that were back in there and survived. There was this big tsunami that came through. I can't remember if it was Yakutat Bay or Icy Bay or where it was. The Jim Baichtel, the Forest Service geologist, was telling me about that. And I was able to find that story somewhere, like a write-up of that. It was pretty interesting. But that was, and I don't know which earthquake it might have been that caused the raise there. Maybe the 64 quake also caused some significant rise there. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's kind of interesting country there. That's one of the, I think they say it's the fastest eroding, fastest erosion is happening there up in that area, St. Elias Mountains and so forth.
Oh.
Cause there's so much, cause the ice is basic, but it's also uplifting at about the same rate as it's eroding. But the glaciers, and there's so much moisture that goes up and the snow and glaciers come down and are pulling everything down, but you have a lot of uplift going there because the plates are merging. So kind of interesting geological country up there, but we should probably wrap up here and see if Connor, before he falls asleep, as he's been struggling with these early mornings and late nights with grandparents here and fishing opportunities. I know you got to go out fishing earlier this week and catch a salmon or two.
Yeah.
How was that?
Good.
Yeah. And so is there any things that you want to tell us about before we finish up here?
No.
No, you're just going to go ahead and fall asleep?
No, I already took my nap for today.
You took your nap for today? All right. Well, you suppose your grandpa has anything else he wants to add?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Well, you want to ask him?
Do you have anything else?
I, on the other hand, didn't get my nap for today.
So?
And some pesky little critter beside me made sure I didn't get my nap yesterday, too. This is getting bad on my on my retirement.
I got squashed in the process.
All right. So grandkids like to wrestle, but wrestle isn't lead to conducive nap taking.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in and sharing some of your stories.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to a conversation I recorded with my dad and my son earlier this week. I appreciate them taking time out of their busy schedule of fishing and berry picking and nap taking and coming in and speaking with me on one of our nice sunny days this past week. And thanks to all of you out there for listening. And as always, appreciate hearing reports of things that folks are seeing out there, observations. It's always interesting. More eyes see more things. And so I really enjoy hearing about what's going on and hope you're out there looking at stuff and sharing it with others. And if you're interested in sharing some of your observations with me or have some questions about stuff you've seen and think I might be able to help, I'd be happy to try. You can send me email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or you can get on Facebook and like the Sitka Nature page there and post to that page. Or you can go to sitkanature.org/raven and there also find links to recordings of past shows. Leave comments for me there if you like as well. So thanks again for joining me this week. This has been Matt on the Sitka Nature Show, KCAW Sitka.